at center and coming in as Loeb. Hewitt Dyke center net. And scores! Matty McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
And he's stopped by Markstrom from point blank range.
You can put it in the win column!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome to Hour 2 of the program on this Tuesday, September 27th. Coming at you from our Sportsnet 960 downtown studio alongside Aaron Vickers from Daily Hive. My name is Pat Steinberg. Flames Talk available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. Thank you very much for being along with us. If you're listening live, text line open at 960-960. And let's dive right in because we've got a game on Tuesday night in Seattle and then a Wednesday night game back at the Dome against the Oilers. The game in Seattle is going to be one where, you know, we don't see a ton of the top name talent, much like you see, especially early in the preseason. Road games are usually reserved for prospects, PTOs, guys who are trying to crack the team, and sometimes, you know, the odd veteran who has to make the trip. So we're not going to see Rasmus Anderson on Tuesday night. We'll probably see him back in on Wednesday against the Oilers. He played Sunday at the Dome, played just under 26 minutes. And we talked to him on Monday, Vix, and we were talking about a lot of different things with Rasmus. Did you know that he had 50 points last year? And it's not like I was surprised by that. I knew that he had his best offensive season. I just forgotten how productive he was. He only scored 4 goals, but he had 46 assists last year. He ended up being 5th in team scoring. And the only players who had more points last year than Rasmus Anderson were the two 100-point guys, Lindholm, Mangiapane. Next was Rasmus Anderson. He was a top 20 defenseman in the NHL in terms of points. I was like, damn, I maybe didn't appreciate just how much of an offensive leap he took last year. Could he be in line for another offensive step this season? Could this be potentially a bigger year offensively for Rasmus?
Before we get to that, did he have the quietest career year out of anybody on the team last year?
Like you mentioned, he very well might have.
It's crazy to go back and look, and you rattled off the names. The top 5 scorers were the top line, Andrew Mangiapane, and Rasmus Anderson. And the incredible thing with Rasmus Anderson, as you mentioned, 46 of those were assists. He only scored 4 goals last year. He had 152 shots, scored only 4 times on that. That shooting percentage is 2.6%. So you look at some of the other names at the top of the scoring list for defensemen last year. Roman Josi, he shot 8.2%. Kale McCarr, 11.7%. Victor Hedman, 9.1%. Aaron Ekblad, 8.3%. Rasmus Anderson, 2.6%. There's a lot of room for growth in not only the offensive side in terms of moving the puck up, becoming more of a facilitator,
yep,
growing that way because he's still young and rounding out his game in terms of his 200-foot game, particularly heading up the ice. But if you factor in him shooting more and just generally that shooting percentage has to rise, like 2.6% on 152 shots, that's, I don't want to say abysmal, that's bad. But I don't necessarily see
it's
that
not
as
like
Rasmus
on him, right?
Yeah, I don't see Rasmus Anderson being a bad shooter. Outside of Michael Stone, who technically isn't on this roster right now, there's not another player on this team that has the one-timer, the slap shot that Rasmus Anderson has. So there
just
is potential there, to just not on Sunday. And he'll be the first to tell you. Andrew Mangiapane will be the second. Michael Backlund yeah, will be the third. And then everybody else will just pile on after that. There's room for growth here, and I'm curious to see it.
Think about like the mean shooting percentage in the NHL. If it hovers, say, around 8%, and it's a floating target, but let's just if it hovers between 7 and 8% is the mean shooting percentage, and he's at 2.6, like you're probably that's 5% over a season below the league average. Rasmus Anderson is not so poor a shooter that he's 5% worse than the rest of the league. That's a lot of bad percentages that he doesn't necessarily control. So you're about to hear from Rasmus. He's going to talk about how much he wants to shoot the puck more. If you're talking about a guy who shoots the puck more and at the same time is able to have the percentage start to work a little bit more in his favor. I'm not talking about him becoming an NHL sniper, but if it comes even 3 or 4% back towards the mean and he's shooting more, like, we could be talking about significantly more offense from Rasmus, especially significantly when it comes to more goals. Like, his prior season, he was at 5.2%, and defensemen are a little bit different. They're always going to be a little bit lower just because of where they're shooting from. His full season's in the NHL, 1.74, 4%, 5.2%, and last year 2.6. So he was, even though his shooting percentage is lower than the NHL mean, he was below his average last year. So if that starts to correct itself and he shoots a little bit more, could be a big year. Here's Rasmus from Monday talking about what he wants to bring offensively this season.
I think I got to shoot a little bit more. I think I had 2 shots a game. What's my average? I think I got to get that up and then, you know, make plays. And I think I can join the rush a little bit more and but still be responsible in defensive side of puck.
When you talk about being more creative, is that like hanging on to it? Like, is it poise? Is it?
It's a little bit of, yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of everything. As I said, more shots, you know, give and go, jump in the middle and join the rush and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you're just trying to get the timing right and, you know, you're trying different stuff. Yesterday, even though, you know, it's the first game, you're trying to get into it. And I think it was overall an okay effort. And, yeah, you know, it was a long time ago we played a game, so... you know, as I said, just to get the timing and get one game under the belt is good. Now we keep building.
Is there a number you have in mind, or is it more just the mentality? You said more shots, like you said two less.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, with the amount I'm on the ice and that kind of stuff, I think I should at least be on 3-4 average a game. So just honestly, I think last year I was looking to pass a lot and... this year, if I hit my one tee, so I can probably, you know, just shoot a little bit more.
What goes into that? Is that coaches kind of telling you at year-end meetings, Rasmus, we want you to shoot more? Is that you kind of taking on yourself?
We always talk about, you know, the D shooting a lot, and I think I'm one of those guys who wants to make an extra pass, and I just sometimes it's just, you know, you never happen. You saw in the playoffs when I scored from my own zone, and so, you know, you just got to throw some pucks at the net, and... you know, it kind of worked from there. You know, it's the hardest kind of defense when there's a rebound and when there's chaotic in front of the net. So I got to get a little bit better at shooting the puck. And then, you know, the rest of my game, I felt pretty happy with last
year. So that was Rasmus Andersson on Monday following practice. So I did some math while listening to that. And he talks about, I had a calculator.
I did some math during that as well. So I'm curious to see what number you pulled.
So... As he was talking there, he talks about he wants to get his shots up, and he said, okay, well, if I can go, I average about 2 shots per game. He was a little under 2 shots per game last year.
1.85,
games,
yeah.
152 shots. If he gets that up by 1 shot per game, so that adds 82. So now we're up to something, 200 and something. I don't have it in front of me anymore. But I did. So you add the 82 to 152,
carry
200
the
and something. And then you let's say that his shooting percentage goes to 4% next year. Like that, all of a sudden, now you're talking about 9 to 10 goals, and only 8 defensemen in the NHL had more assists than Rasmus Andersson did last year. So now, all of a sudden, if he continues to distribute, we think he's going to get a significant role on the power play. If he shoots it a little bit more and the shooting percentage progresses to the mean or the average a little bit more, like, yeah, we could be talking about a step forward again. So maybe he goes from 50 to flirting with 60 points this year. I don't think that's crazy. Part of that is because I've got a big-time inherent bias when it comes to this player. I think he's dynamite. I think he's gotten better each and every year. It was apparent. It felt like... it was a foregone conclusion, at least in my mind, as soon as he stepped in that year, even though he wasn't playing the same time, that this guy has the opportunity to be a star. The way he sees the game, the way he plays the game, the way that every year he seems to work on his skating, I think they've got a hell of a hockey player here, and I don't think it's crazy to think that Rasmus could flirt with 60 points this year after putting up a career-high 50 last year, because it's not like this team doesn't have offensive talent to help boost everybody's total. So I'm really curious about what the step forward offensively looks like for Rasmus this year.
Are you curious about the math I did?
I am, actually.
Okay, so first and foremost, I'm wearing sandals today, so I could use my toes to count. So I've got 20 digits to work with. I don't know if that's a flag for the downtown office or not.
I'm wearing sandals, dude.
I didn't even look. 100
I'm glad
and
you weren't looking at my feet, to be perfectly honest with you.
152 shots in 82 games. That's 1.85. So let's just say he ups that one shot per game. He said three or four. I'm going to go conservative on the shot total. If he goes, it's funny you mentioned 8% as being, you know, roughly the mean in the NHL, and he's a defenseman, so it's going to be a little bit lower, but I picked 8%. So if he has a shot per game and moves his shooting percentage up to 8%, that's a 19-goal scorer. There was only three defensemen to go 20 or above last year. We're talking about elite goal scoring from the back end, which I think he has, not only with the shot, but with the opportunities he's going to get. You mentioned in the preseason game he played 26 minutes. I don't necessarily think we're going to see 26 minutes a night out of him, but I can see 23, 24, and I can see him quarterbacking one of the two power plays, particularly the top power play unit, which might, in my mind, be lacking a bit of a shooter the way he can shoot the puck. So if he gets a little bit more greedy up top on that power play, there's no reason for me to think that he can't be a double-digit goal scorer and a 60-point defenseman in the NHL.
I don't think it's crazy at all. And again, only eight defensemen had more assists than he did last year. And you know, you're talking about kind of the who's who of offensive defensemen in front of him. Roman Josi, Victor Hedman, Adam Fox, Quinn Hughes, Morgan Rielly, Chris Letang, Cale Makar, John Carlson. Those are the eight defensemen that had more assists than Rasmus Anderson did last year. Like, those are the guys that are always putting up numbers like that.
That's elite company when you're talking about defensemen who produce. And we're talking about Rasmus Anderson being one of those guys that can produce that much in terms of assists. I don't see any reason why he can't be a double-digit goal scorer as well, adding to that. And that bridges the gap from becoming a 50-point defenseman to a 60-point defenseman and moving into, you know, roughly the top 10 in terms of offensive producers from the back end.
And what I liked is that, and we're probably not talking enough about his defense partner because Noah Hanifin had 48 points last year. But what I think we maybe, like, we're glossing over a little bit is that last year that pairing combined for 98 points. And it wasn't always together because, you know, different power play points. They weren't getting all those points as a pairing. But just straight math, 98 points between Anderson and Hanifin last year. And as a pairing, they were very strong offensively. But during the regular season, and I know maybe it dipped in the playoffs, and Rasmus, I remember when he sat down with me a couple of weeks ago after the golf tournament, he said it. Like, it didn't feel like his level or that pairing's level was as strong in the playoffs. But in the regular season, they were a top 10 pairing in the NHL in all metrics. Yes, they produced, but who they were playing against, the way they defended, the way they checked, the way they transitioned, their metrics were off the charts. They were a very, very good pairing, elite pairing in the NHL last year. So it's not like we're talking about this and saying maybe a guy like Anderson could, you know, go from 50 to 60 and saying that, well, he's going to be a liability or you're going to have to put him in a lot of offensive situations. I don't think that's necessarily the case because he put up 50 and was one of the top defensive distributors in the NHL last year while playing clearly a top pairing role and doing so against top-end opposition. And that was a really, really good year for him and a big-time building block.
I think you make a valid point. Squeezing 10 more points out of Rasmus Anderson to make him a 60-point defenseman, it doesn't come at the expense of his defense, in my mind. It just comes with him getting more pucks on net, his shooting percentage going up, and perhaps his power play time going up as well. You don't have to sacrifice his center ice back to Jacob Markstrom or Dan Vladar because that's still going to be there. It's just generating more when you're in the offensive zone and perhaps getting a little greedy when you're in the blue line forward. And I could see the situation last year. If you're out on the ice and you're circling, you're watching Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, Elias Lindholm circle the offensive zone, maybe you defer a little bit. But I think this is the season that we'll see Rasmus Anderson take a little bit more command in the offensive end.
A few texts at 960-960 on this front. Says, not sure if it's easy to find how many of Anderson's shots ended up getting tipped in. I don't know that answer right off the top of my head. This says, the only thing he's got to do is get those shots through traffic. I feel like a lot of issues come from that. What would Anderson's shot attempts versus shots be? I can look that up for you really quickly as we continue this conversation. But yeah, I do think that is one area that as you grow as a defenseman, especially as you get better as a guy that is an offensive defenseman, or not even an offensive defenseman, but a guy that gets better and a more productive defenseman. That's a better way of putting it. Yeah, part of that is getting shots through. And that's why I'm bringing up the shot attempts versus shots for Anderson from last season. But yeah, that is a big part of what he is going to have to work on. Not even work on, but one of the big things that's going to help if we have this conversation. Part of that absolutely is putting pucks on net and getting through traffic.
Well, a lot of it is shot selection and deciding when to shoot and when not to shoot. So you can, as you're pulling up the stats of how many shots he had blocked versus how many got through, if he's finding that a lot of those shots are getting blocked, maybe he just needs to be a little bit smarter in his shot selection. And that, in turn, will generate more shots through on net per game. And maybe that's the difference between 160 shots a season and 240 shots a season like he wants to get to.
Yeah. I still find it amazing how quickly some of these websites... You can disseminate so much information in such a quick period of time. So at all strengths last year, as we mentioned, 152 shots for Rasmus Anderson. That's on 289 shot attempts. So he puts a little bit less than double the shot attempts towards the net. So shot attempts are individual. Corsi 4 includes shots on goal, missed shots, and block shots. And he put 289 for, and that would then, if you do the, this is dork talk.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if several of those
75
shots
were blocked because individual, like here's dork talk, but individual Fenwick, 214, individual Corsi, 289, not dork talk, nerd talk. Nerd's a better word for it. But yeah, put... 75 of the 289 attempts were blocked last year.
And
so I actually did a pretty good job of getting them through traffic.
The rest of them just went over the net, I'm assuming, with a slap shot from the point. He has a tendency to put him a little high, maybe some
he's not
chin music.
He's not Zadorov. A couple times last year. I love Zadorov. I think I'm so happy he's back. It's a couple times last year. It's like he activated from the blue line and he would put a shot. Like what? It went into the corner. You're like, where is that thing going?
You know what? It's perfect to set up because he does that the first time, gets between the goalie's ears, and then puts the old Power 5, the Milan Lucic Power 5 along the ice, see what happens.
I'm actually really really interested to see. I thought Zadorov took some big steps last year. Was one of the maybe undervalued players on the team last year. And, you know, he took a rough ride early on, the preseason, early regular season. There were some big-time adventures and some, like, whoopsie-daisy moment. But as the season went along, Zadorov grew in a huge, huge way. Not only like just grew on me as a player, but as a player, he grew. And by the time they went into the playoffs, like he had taken multiple steps in terms of what he meant to the Flames team. So, yeah, I'm actually really interested to see what Zadorov could do this year. And we don't know who he's going to play with this year, but he's a really intriguing player for me this year.
There's a lot of different themes you can roll with in terms of this Flames blue line. We mentioned Rasmus Anderson. Noah Hanifin, I think, still has some room to grow. I think he can be a 50-point defenseman. And then you look at Uyghur Tanev. And then, I mean, it can spark a debate on its own. Who's the number one pairing for the Calgary Flames if it happens to be that top four? Is it Hanifin-Anderson? Is it
Uyghur
Tanev?
Don't know. It's a 1A, 1B situation if everything goes according to plan, right?
Do you roll them out 25 minutes a game each and then pour Zadorov and insert player here just eating 10 minutes a night?
I don't know if it's quite to that extent. I mean, look at last year. Gudbranson and Zadorov weren't playing 12 minutes. They were playing like 17 minutes. And it was pretty evenly staggered. Like we weren't talking about 25, 24, 12. It was like 23, 21, 17. That was partly because that pairing really took on a life of its own and was really strong, but they could recreate that this year. They would love it. Again, last year, Flames the only team in the NHL that had three pairings in the top 10 of 5-on-5 ice together. That's how consistent and how much continuity there was on Calgary's blue line last year. That's not something that is easy to recreate, especially after you make the trade, you say goodbye to Gudbranson. I'm not saying that's going to be easy to to recreate, but if they could come close to it, they'd be pretty damn happy.
Well, I think if Oliver Shillington were here, we'd have a better understanding if that was even an option. Fair. Because you're looking at those top four, like we mentioned, and then if you have Zadorov and you're comfortable with Shillington playing his right side, well, you're almost set up for the same scenario again this year.
You know, Mackenzie Weegar flirted with 50 points last year. Noah Hanifin flirted with 50 points last year, and Rasmus Andersson hit 50 on the nose. I mean, I'm curious, do they? Because they had two guys in that 50-point defense range last season. Do they have three in that range this year? Again, I don't know for sure, but all three of those guys clearly have the potential to be in that 50-point range.
Well, and you think of Mackenzie Weegar, I think all but three, certainly all but four of those points came at even strength for him. So if you're looking at another option on the power play and you want to opt with Rasmus Andersson on one unit, Mackenzie Weegar on another, or even if you want to go with the more traditional old school 2D on the power play at the point and you have either Hanifin and Rasmus Andersson or even Hanifin and Mackenzie Weegar, well, either way, Mackenzie Weegar is getting more power play time in Calgary than he did in Florida. So naturally you'd think with the expanded role, the expanded offensive opportunity on the man advantage, 50 shouldn't be out of the question for him either.
A few texts to wrap up. 96960 says, be interesting who gets the D spot on PP1. That will be quite interesting. This says, I hated Big Z at the start of last season, or here, Big Zed. I hated Big Zed at the start of last season. So happy to see Sutter got him under control and honed his skills. He is still a young defenseman, and I still think there's a little bit of development left in his game. And finally, this says, isn't it flawed logic when you're talking about Andersson? How many of those assists were off rebound? So if he scores on more of those, wouldn't he have less assists in theory? Maybe, but not if he's shooting more and he's significantly shooting more, that doesn't mean that the assists necessarily have to come down. So that's a fair question, but doesn't necessarily have to be the way of things. With Aaron Vickers, Daily Hive, it's Steinberg along with you. This is Hour 2 of Flames Talk. We're available wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. Go hit subscribe.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Hour 2 rolls on this Tuesday, which also happens to be a preseason game day in Seattle. It is a young lineup. They are not bringing the heavy hitters, as you'd expect. If you have been a purveyor of preseason hockey over the years, you know that this time of year, early in the preseason, on the road, you're not usually bringing the sexiest of lineups. But instead, they're more of, you know, if you're the hardcore fan and you're looking at who might get the first recall in the season or which player might crack the roster that you weren't expecting, this is where it really starts to take shape. Here's what you're looking at Tuesday at Climate Pledge Arena. The two goaltenders are Vladar and Dansk. We don't know which one is starting. I think we're guessing it's Vladar, but I don't know if did you see who went off first?
I didn't catch that. You did point out Vladar was in the starter's net tonight. I did point out that technically that's the visitor's
that's
end.
Why I don't, that's why I'm not doing goal. It. So the Flames were 41-41 on home games last year of the goalie in the starter's net starts the game, but because they're on the road, and now he was where the water bottles were, he was on the Flames. Anyway, Vladar and Dansk are your goalies. Don't know who's starting. Won't know until we hit warm-up on Tuesday night, but it doesn't really matter. It's the preseason, so both play.
If I were to guess, I would think Dansk, because Vladar started the last game, and then Dansk came in for the
third
period.
I could absolutely see that.
I could see this exact opposite happening in Seattle.
Here's what we know. For the forward and defense lines, this is the way that they went. Forward lines, Cody Eakin playing center between Dylan Dubé and Walker Duehr. Connor Zeri centering Adam Rzyczka on the left. Very interesting. And Sonny Milano on the right. Ben Jones will center Jacob Pelche on the left and Matthew Phillips on the right. And Cole Schwint centers Alex Gallant on the left and Adam Klapka on the right. Your defense pairs, Mackey with Milosh, Gilbert with DeSimone, and Valimaki with Kuznetsov. That's what you're looking at Tuesday night for the Flames in Seattle. It's a big opportunity for a number of players because I think that you could probably get onto two hands talking about players that either are trying to put themselves in the mix to be on the opening night roster and crack the 23, or trying to leave an impression that when it's time for a recall, the Flames are thinking to themselves, okay, he was really good in training camp. He's had a great start to the American League season. Let's go that direction. See if I'm missing anybody. Yusuf Alamaki, Nick Melosh, Connor Mackey on the back. Up front, Pelche, Phillips, Rozicka, Ekin Milano, Zeri, Dewar, Klapka. Those are all guys that I think would be in that category that I just listed. Did I miss anybody?
Did you have Cole Swinton there?
No, I did not have Swinton there. I think that's a fair one. Yep.
Absolutely. He's a guy that's probably more looking to fight for the pecking order than he is an NHL job at this point. He's just becoming a second-year pro as we roll into October. But he's a guy that's going to want to make a really good, strong first impression, too. The Calgary Flames really wanted him in that Florida Panthers deal. He wasn't just a throw-in. He wasn't an afterthought. And he had a really solid pro season. I'm still learning what he is in terms of watching him in the Penticton tournament and in camp and in these exhibition games. So I'm really curious to see what he does tonight. There's a whole host of players, though, I'm curious to see about. Adam Rozicka is one of them. Jacob Pelletier is obviously going to be one of them. Matthew Phillips as well. I'm really going to be focusing my attention on the forward core and seeing who stands out amongst these younger players, talking 24, 23 and under, that are really vying for A, a chance to stay in Calgary, and B, as you mentioned, being the first call-up.
This was the time last year when Oliver Shillington really started to pop. You know, preseason game number two, I guess it's technically three, but preseason night number two, number three, as you started to move towards the halfway mark of the exhibition schedule, it's when people really started, oh, 58's looking pretty good. And then it continued when, you know, the back half of the preseason, the final week of the preseason is usually when the lineups on the other team, both teams get a little bit better and the evaluation opportunity becomes a little easier. And Shillington still was popping at that point. So if you're a player, this is when you want to start to kind of get on the radar. And then what you're trying to do is keep yourself in the lineups when they're almost NHL, but not quite near the end of the preseason, and now you're really looking at an opportunity to go out there and show what you've got against big-time players and big-time competitions. So this is a really good opportunity to evaluate, because Seattle's group on Tuesday night is going to be, again, not full NHL, but they got some good players going.
Well,
so
you look at the top line that they're going to roll out tonight. It's Jordan Eberle, Shane Wright, the number four overall
number
pick.
Number four, yep.
Possible number one, fell to number four. And Jaden Schwartz on the right side there. So, I mean, there's an NHL lineup. If you're a defenseman, if you're Connor Mackey, if you're Yusuf Valimaki, if you're Nick Melosh, you're going to see some NHL caliber talent and some, you know, top six NHL caliber talent. Like you said, now's the time to pop. Now's the time to start showing it. Oliver Shillington did it last year. We know for a fact right now that there's a spot open on Calgary Flames' blue line. Maybe two if you want to roll with a number seven as well as a younger player. So if you're some of these players that are vying for your NHL life, your NHL future, not to get super dramatic about it, but in the case of a couple of these guys that are going to have to go through waivers, this could be your one chance with the Calgary Flames. Start showing it tonight.
Adam Rozicka playing on the wing is the most fascinating wrinkle of this game in Seattle. We have not seen a lot of that. That's not something that we have seen a ton of since he was drafted by the Flames. So it's kind of a new look watching him there. You know, you take a look at what he's done in Stockton. He's been a center iceman. You take a look at what he did last year in the NHL. He was a center iceman. So this is a new wrinkle for him not playing down the middle and playing on the left side. So as we talked about in hour one on the Daily Flames roundtable, if there is an opportunity for him to make this team out of camp, it might have to be on the wing. So you couple that with the fact that we haven't seen a lot of it, I'm really interested. And sometimes, usually, it's easier to make that jump from center to the wing as opposed to vice versa. But it doesn't always, like, remember Michael Backlund on the wing? That was not, he hated it. It wasn't really great. Like, that wasn't awesome. Other guys can do it much more easy. I'm curious how Rozicka looks in that regard.
Yeah, and through all this time, even heading into training camp, the start of training camp, it never really clicked to me, Adam Rozicka, the left winger. It's always been Adam Rozicka, the center. A lot of that's because if you have a guy that can play down the middle that's 6'4", 220, 230 pounds, that is an intriguing option if you're an NHL head coach, being able to roll somebody out like that that can have power. I don't remember ever seeing him on the wing in Calgary. I don't remember ever seeing him on the wing in Stockton. I don't remember ever seeing him on the wing in Sarnia back in junior in his draft year. So this is going to be in a situation where, yeah, this is going to be one of the most intriguing experiments, if you will, of certainly this game. And if it's something that lasts 2, 3, 4 games, or we see it through 2, 3, 4 days of camp, it's something to really consider. And you look at Calgary's center depth right now: Lindholm, Kadri, Backlund, Rooney, Lewis, if you want, Dubé, if you want. Adam Rzeczka right now, to me, doesn't fit down the middle. So if you can find a spot for him on the wing in that top nine where we know there's a vacancy, it's worth exploring to me.
We talked to Adam following morning skate as he gets set to play the wing in Seattle, and talked a little bit about doing so and, you know, maybe some of the adjustments and what he's willing to do to make the team.
Well, it's a little different role, but it stays the same. You got to compete in every single position you're going to play, and just play hard and be good structurally and learn how to play wing.
Have you had any conversations with the coaching staff about being on the wing? Is that maybe an opportunity there for you versus the middle?
Yeah, there's a good chance. I mean, I spoke to coaching staff. They want to try me on the wing, so I'm playing there tonight, and let's see how it goes.
Do you have a lot of experience on the wing? I've only ever seen you as a center, so
yeah, I can play whatever. I don't really care. I played center, wing, whatever wing in the junior, so it doesn't matter for me.
Defense or goal?
Whatever you want. If I'm gonna make the NHL, I play in the goal.
Hey, I like the attitude.
How about
doing
that
what
line?
It takes?
If I'm gonna play in the NHL, I'll even play goal. Why not? 6'4". He's got the size.
I'm interested to see how it goes. I kind of like, he remains one of the, like, is he the top prospect in the organization? Is he even a prospect still in the organization? I don't know, because prospects would be Wolf, Coronado, Zeri, Pelche. Like, those would be prospects. Is Matthew Phillips a prospect anymore, or is he depth? And there's always that, there's no criteria as to when you go from being a prospect to being organizational depth. It's kind of this weird gray area that you cross over into. And I wonder where Rzeczka is on that list. Is he still a prospect, or is he crossed over into being organizational depth? I don't know. And it's not like there's anything wrong with being organizational depth either.
Well, he's still eligible for the Calder, same with Matty Phillips. So do you use the Calder criteria in determining whether or not you're still a prospect? Because then you're getting into a real gray area where you can be, you know, 1, 2, 3 years older and still be eligible for the Calder. To me, it's less about, is he a prospect? Is he depth? It's what he can contribute now, because he's in a situation where he's waiver eligible. You probably don't want to lose him with how much you've got invested in him. And again, the sheer upside that he has. He was drafted in the 4th round in 2017. That wasn't necessarily indicative of the talent and the overall package that he had. There's just some red flags in his game, his consistency, his effort level, things of that sort back when you're, you know, 18, 19, and teenager. He's clearly put in the work. Seeing him, he's put in the work. So you can kind of park some of the commitment questions that he had early on junior. Now you've got to find a spot for him if you want to keep him, so to speak. You don't gift him one, you make him earn one. But I'm very curious to tie it all back to having him play left wing tonight. Is that a spot he can fill for the Calgary Flames? And what's the measure of success for him tonight playing the wing for, in my eyes, the first time in a long time?
Yeah, and I don't know if there is a measure of success in one game. What I'm really curious about is how long that might go on for and how long they give him that opportunity. Is this a one-game thing? Or is this something that we see 2 or 3 more times in preseason action, maybe in practice between now and the end of the of training camp? So I don't know. But it is an interesting wrinkle for this game in Seattle, and maybe the most interesting wrinkle for me. Because I think that if that works, he's all of a sudden in that top nine mix. And I don't know if, you know, we've been talking about this. There's a spot open in the top nine. Who's it going to be? Sonny Milano's here. And Matthew Phillips is pushing for it. And what about Jacob Pelche, a first-round pick? And, you know, where is Dylan Dubé going to fit in when it's all said and done? Maybe Rzeczka can put himself in that same mix, which, as of like 3 or 4 days ago, I probably wouldn't have had him. But now you see this, maybe that does let him enter that conversation.
Well, to me, a little bit, it speaks to the fact that the Calgary Flames haven't settled on who's going to fill that right wing spot in the top six or whichever wing you want to look at it, because there's so many guys that can play both sides in terms of the wingers that the Calgary Flames have at their deployment. So why not just toy around with a few more options that you have internally? And if it turns out none of them satisfy you, then maybe you can go around, look, see who was on the waiver wire, see who might be expendable on the 31 other organizations to try to fill the spot that way. You might as well tinker. That's what preseason's for. It's for tinkering with lines. It's for tinkering with combinations. And it's tinkering to see what you actually have. So tinker away.
And that's why you're right. That's why I find it interesting is as a training camp goes along, when you've got one or two lines that are pretty much set in stone and don't move. You know, we're approaching a week into camp now, and we haven't seen anything different with Huberto, Toffoli, and Lindholm. This is the first time that we haven't seen Coleman, Backlund, Dubé together, because Dubé's playing in the preseason game. Backlund and Coleman are not, so they skated after the morning skate group. So that's Anderson and Hanifin have been together the entire time. Essentially, like Lucic and Rooney have been together with either Lewis or Richie. And the only reason I think that's been broken up is because Richie got hurt. So you're starting to see a little bit of continuity, but there's still some things that have been different and that have rotated through. So you're seeing continuity and maybe things getting a little bit closer in that cement settling in some areas, and some areas there's still some questions. So that as we're now into week two, I guess physically week two, and we're approaching 1 week of being in training camp, it's interesting to see how some things have evolved and how some things have stayed kind of, I don't want to say stagnant, but a little bit more congruous. It's interesting.
Well, yeah, and you look at the groups from the second group to skate today, and Huberto, Lindholm, Toffoli, as you mentioned, still together. Mangiapane, Kadri, and Backlund split down the middle, and Coleman. So if you really want to look at the pairs for lines two and three, you got Mangiapane and Kadri together, Backlund and Coleman together. And then, of course, Lucic, Rooney, and Lewis. We'll see Richie sort of rotate through there. I believe he's day-to-day right now with an injury. So you really have got, depending on what you do with Dylan Dubé, you've really got that one spot that you're really trying to iron out. We've talked Matty Phillips. We've talked Sonny Milano. We've talked Eakin. We've talked Pelletier to a degree. There's just an option that hasn't seemed to naturally fit there. Now, granted, again, we're 7 days in, 6 days in. We've still got some time to see this play out.
Oh, yeah.
But why not just explore?
That'll start to wrap things up on hour two of Flames Talk for Azam, who has been our outstanding producer. Aaron Vickers is at Daily Hive, and my name is Pat Steinberg. Wrapping up hour two of the program. You can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. Love it if you went and hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.